Welcome to the Craveable Podcast, Season 2, Episode 1, Culinary Inspiration. 1, 2, 3, 4. Craveable Podcast, where real matters. We are your hosts, Ben and Katie, and this show is brought to you by Fossil Farms. Today, we have a fun topic that we have generalized into the title of culinary inspirations, right, which can mean a wealth of different things, of all sorts. So, Ben, why don't you take off running here? What do you have to say about culinary inspirations?
Where do we start? Should I do the same story every chef does of the dust falling over the kitchen table while my Nona rolled pasta? Never happened in my house. I was inspired, like most Americans, in front of the TV, for better or for worse, because, you know, if your parents are busy, they plop you down somewhere. I always loved food, having immigrant parents who were also into food, and we traveled a lot when we were younger, so I was exposed to a lot of things. And then you see, like, those old culinary giants, and literally, in this case, in the form of your favorite and my favorite, Julia Child, and her cooking show, very inspiring, and her partner in crime, everyone's favorite Frenchman, Jacques Pepin. Those two always come to mind first, because that's like the older culinary.
Old school.
Yeah, the old school TV network guys who were doing things before Emeril even, and then kind of going from there, watching a ton of Food Network stars in college. And then, of course, Anthony Bourdain. I mean, that's like the large picture of everything. But when we were talking about this before, I don't know if you are so inspired by such hit films as Julie and Julia.
Okay, first of all, I absolutely love that movie.
Okay, great.
Secondly, I kind of had a different, I mean, I wasn't even necessarily thinking about how I first got interested in food and cooking when we were talking about this. I was almost thinking about, okay, like what inspires different people to cook different things and when and why. We can get into that too. But I guess I'll do my origin story now as well, just to mirror yours. Well, I always liked cooking. Baking really was my first thing. I wanted to, when I was a kid, I wanted to own a bakery, and it was going to be called, Dad, if you're listening, the Pink and Green Bakery, because those are my favorite colors. Very, very well thought out plan.
Yeah, they go really well together.
yeah, great. But no, and I always loved to watch the Food Network back when. I actually kind of hate how all the food channels, there's no cooking shows anymore. It's literally just all competitions,
right,
and things like that. And I mean, I kind of hate it, because I used to love turning it on and being like, oh, let's watch even Emeril. Like, sometimes I still will be cooking and I'll be like, oh yeah, babe. Because like, that's what you would do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, bam, you know? But I used to love watching those things all the time. Like, that, I would literally just turn on Food Network and watch those shows. So that was always, you know, something I was interested in. And then when I started college, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. That remained the course for 2 years. And then halfway through my sophomore year, I was like, oh, it was mom, if you're listening, my mom suggested, she's like, oh, why aren't you doing hospitality? Like, that's perfect for you. And I was like, phew.
But you didn't want to work in hospitals.
Very funny, Ben. Very funny. No, I studied hotel, restaurant, and institutional management. And the University of Delaware actually has a really great culinary program that is, you know, it's not culinary school, but we had a 5-star, like really high class student run restaurant. And we had a series of different labs we had to take throughout the years. And I mean, they were long, like they were like 6-hour classes where you're, you know, working a shift and you're either going like your front of house, your back of house. But that really, you know, I really learned more and really liked food. And then 2 months out of college, I had no idea what to do. A surreptitious meetup with the woman I'd never met before suggested me, oh, there's this great chef, you know, if you like food and you don't know what to do, man, maybe go check that out. And then I staged in the kitchen. I was there literally until 11:30, mopping the floors and
90 acres.
Yeah. And the CDC was like, all right, you know, call me back. And he was like, all right, yeah, we'd love to bring you on.
And you're like, I knew it.
No, I did not know it. But the rest is history.
University of Delaware, great school. I know we joke about this a lot because it's funny to you.
What are we talking about?
The only school I didn't
podcast?
Get into when I applied to colleges was University of Delaware. Katie's like, that's where I went. I guess you didn't get in. Still hilarious.
Yeah.
But to touch on your point, I guess the word inspiration is pretty broad, right? Because like people inspire me, like every soul in this building is probably inspired to some extent by Anthony Bourdain, be it from the love of traveling and food and getting to know people and exploring cultures. Versus, you know, the culinary magnates that we know, either in restaurant industry or for Food Network, et cetera. Guy Fieri, love Guy Fieri, only ever heard good things about him. And like these people are like, I think sometimes they're bigger than life characters. So people are making them sort of cartoonish, but they're all of these people have great culinary acumen. And I think they inspire me to do things because it's such a hodgepodge of different types of people and different walks of life. Everybody kind of collects around the dinner table. But you did touch on something that I do want to talk about because I want to get it from your point of view. Is do you get inspired when you see things? I know you've been doing some meal planning and I know I've been doing not nearly enough cooking. But like every now and then I'll see we get something in here that's new or like coming back in, or I'll see something on the grocery store. What's the moment when you get inspired? What do you see where you're like, this has the wheels turning?
Yeah. I mean, that's totally, there is no one thing. I will tell you that it is not often that I go to a grocery store without a plan. Like I don't go there and see something and that just ignites spark. And I'm like, oh, make that. That has virtually never happened to me. Yeah.
We're living on a budget. I get that.
But, you know, it could be, I mean, sometimes just talking to friends and coworkers, other people, you know, hearing what they're doing, like Chef Bianca, who you guys know, you know, a couple weekends ago, she's like, yeah, I'm excited. I'm, you know, I'm making bison stew this weekend. And I was like, that chef is a fantastic idea. And I immediately purchased bison stew meat and I made this awesome soup.
It smelled
soup.
So good.
I mean,
when
it was,
you had that.
It was such a hit. Like we absolutely loved it. And you know, it's the cold weather and I'm excited. So, and the weather will also totally. Yeah.
Your mood.
Yeah.
So
inspire
things, yeah.
me. But you know, of course, fortunately or not, we live in a world of social media. And because of my habits, the Instagram algorithm loves to spit food things out at me. So sometimes I'll just see, I mean, I do really like those little reels where people are making a whole recipe and I'm like, oh, that looks real good. You know, I'm just going to make exactly that. Like, yeah. Let's do that. So it's very wide ranging, I would say, what inspires me. Yeah. My mood, the weather, what other people are doing. I see something on a menu and I'm like, oh, I want to recreate that or I want to do something similar. See something on the internet. I mean, it's kind of just, I guess maybe it has to strike me at the right time, right? When I don't have a plan yet, maybe. And then it's like,
oh,
that's what I'm
doing. And you're like, oh, you know what? I did come up with a plan. That was all me.
Yeah. But I think you personally, I think you have a ton of like inspirations in a culinary sense and provide a ton of inspirations. Like you regularly say, you know, oh, I was never a professional cook, right? But
yeah.
You know your way around the kitchen just as good as, you know, everyone else on the sales team that has been a chef.
To some extent.
And no, for real.
Not our sales team.
Okay. Well,
it may be literally any other building in the world, but our sales team has so much culinary acumen in
no,
it that
I
can't even touch that.
Like you soak it up, you know, like
yeah,
I didn't.
Like a sponge.
I don't want to catch flack for this, but like I never, yes, of course, Anthony Bourdain's great, but like I never really watched the shows or like followed him too much. So I don't really follow like culinary personalities that way. And when I was a cook, you know, my coworkers would literally like read cookbooks for inspiration. It was always something I wanted to do more of. Never really got into it. I kind of just like do whatever.
The cookbook thing is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
I have cookbooks at home. I have nice cookbooks at home that are like, you know, with the whole story before it, beautiful picture and everything. I have one that has like a felt cover on it.
Fancy.
Dad. And hear me. Sorry. I've opened it like 4 times and I looked at it and I'm like, I should be using these things. But cookbooks and recipes like that never inspire me. Like to me, that's like a reference sheet for something where I'm like, oh, this is just like knowledge and like a way to do things, but I'm never like reading a story of someone having a meal in Sicily and then they want to go home and recreate it and they have to replace certain ingredients because they're not local and then they've inspired this like new dish at home. That's not me at all.
I guess to a degree, but I mean that, you know, the reason I kind of bring that up about when I was cooking is I was so green at that time, and you know, my fellow cooks in the kitchen, they'd literally bring ideas for new dishes to chef, like complete dishes. And I'd be like, how did you come up with that? I would feel like so dumb. I'm like, where'd you get that? Like, what, literally tell me, where did you just come
looking up in their ear?
No, like the flavor combinations and things, you know, especially like at a nice restaurant like that, you're doing unique things. You're not serving chicken parm. And that's what one of them told me. He was like, I read a lot of cookbooks, like for ideas and flavor pairings and things like that. But I think, Ben, I think sometimes you get ideas from a different, I think you might see something sometimes and you're like, this looks terrible. Who would do this? Okay, Katie, come
here. Yeah, and like this. Do it. I hate it so much, horrible. I want to change it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You hate it so much and you're like, this is how I would make the recipe. And then, so I think you are inspired by hate a little more.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
It's a little bit inspired by hate.
Anybody in the room disagree? No?
No. Okay. Absolutely not.
But that's kind of part of the thing too, is like that we bring that passion to the table. Passion's a double-sided coin, is it not? It is both love and hate. So. That's a whole different topic and I'm either going to drink, but I think when I see something that I'm just wondering, like, what's the appeal? Like, why are you doing it this way? Why not do X, Y, and Z? And like, because I can't ask the person to answer the question, yeah. I'm just coming up with reasons in my head or different ways to do it. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I should try that out and actually give it a go, mm-hmm. which I do infrequently, but I do agree that some of my inspiration stems from being like, ah, oh, this guy, I gotta show him. But yeah. I'm sure a lot of chefs would actually agree with that.
No, 100%. I mean, especially nowadays, you know, when Julia Child was cooking, it wasn't like, I want to be different from everyone and do this bold, unique. It was like, I want to create the best possible tasting food.
Yeah.
And classic dishes.
Yeah.
Nowadays, a lot of the popular chefs, and not celebrity chefs, but, you know, people in our environment, just, you know, well-known chefs, it's all about being different and doing different things and this and that. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think, you know, it's different where people get inspiration from. You know, I mean, I don't think that every single chef doing something new and different, it's not just something that he dreamed about and woke up and was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. You know, it's like, you look at what other people are doing in the culinary environment and around the world. And another thing that I haven't traveled internationally as much as I would have liked, but I mean, travel, talk about that for inspiration.
Right.
Think about how many chefs have gone to another country and their entire perspective of, you know, the culinary repertoire
right.
completely changed.
They're like, oh, I didn't know these fruits existed or these spices and things exactly. like that. And I think that's a big part to touch on your point of like what's popular right now and like what people are talking about. There's so many South Asian foods. There's so many ethnic foods, so many Indian foods. And people are like, oh, this is like new to me. And that's kind of point where people are just like, yeah, you're putting a handful of people on this pedestal that are like inspiring to you, but you're kind of almost denigrating entire 5,000-year-old cultures where they're like, we've been doing this for so long, and it's not new just because you discovered it. But at the same time, I don't think that's the right angle because, you know, it is personal to some people, but it's great to see people being like, I'm inspired by this culture. I'm inspired by this ingredient, and I'm not going to try and like do their thing their way. I'm going to take those ingredients and do what I can with it in that like kind of like write what you know sense. And I do that a lot. I mean, when we got those harissa blends in and I was just like going crazy with them at home.
They were good.
I mean, that's you try something like that and you get inspired. You're like, oh, what if it's on this and let's try it on this. And that really gets me going. But I think for us, it's also hard to look back at culinary things because we're on the younger side. Like, I don't know what it was like cooking in the 70s and what you were able to find at grocery stores versus like going to restaurants and things. But now, like, you and I could go into Bhutan, right?
Yeah.
And we can get sushi. We can get charcuterie imported from Italy. We can get Thai food. We can get Indian food. We can get pizza. We can get literally everything within 15 square miles of our little office in North New Jersey.
I just want to point out that the Thai food is not very good around
here.
Don't edit it. No, yes, you can.
It needs to be heard.
Now, what it does, trust me. It's actually, I personally have, we're going off
now.
She
got live Yelped.
No. I have very strong feelings about Thai food in this entire area, possibly this entire state, possibly this entire country, because I feel like every time I love Thai food, maybe that's not even correct because I haven't even had authentic Thai
food. Right. Yeah. But I wasn't going to, but I thought it.
Every single time I get Thai food, I'm like, wow, this tastes like so Americanized.
Yeah. So bland.
Well, not necessarily that because like I can get spicy things and have it, but it's just everything.
But is it
about
being
it,
spicy, flavorful?
Everything about it. It's just, I'm like, maybe I've never had it, but I know this isn't authentic. And then we found one great place in Morristown, which I talked to you about, and then they closed, and I was devastated, and they turned into that Mediterranean place that you went to, and
It used to be Madame
Thai.
Yeah, they were really good.
They were really good.
That was good. I went once, and I was like, oh, this place is great.
Best
I can't believe I've been here.
And then they closed, and I cried. I shed a single tear.
Yeah, the Mediterranean restaurant that replaced it was not great.
Anyway, let's get back on track here. So you're talking about traveling. I thought of something. This is going to be a little plug here. This show is not sponsored by David Chang. I wish it was, but it is not. But David Chang has a show that I love. Love David Chang. Great show. It's called Ugly Delicious. And I've already watched all of it, but I absolutely, absolutely adore it. And I will tell anyone whose ears are open to listen that the episode where he goes to India is I just got chills. You can't see because it's cold and I'm wearing a sweater. But that is my favorite episode. It is so, I have to go watch it again. It is so interesting. And like, I still remember facts about it. And
you're inspired.
What I was going to say. Talking about cooking exactly per se, right? But I probably watched this episode maybe 2 years ago and I can still tell you now all about bananas. And he is at this street vendor with this guy, and there's all these bananas, and they're all small. And he's like, oh, why do these look like this? And he's like, well, let me tell you about bananas. And
I can't wait. I love bananas and their history.
So do you know about the history of bananas?
Yeah, you go first, though, because okay. I know a more Americanized Jamaica/capitalist version.
So bananas, the best bananas that are the sweetest and the tastiest are the little bananas. Now, India grows the majority of the world's bananas, at least the majority of America's bananas.
Is that true?
It is true. Maybe it was true 2 years ago. Fact check me and then embarrass me in post, okay? But anyway, they grow a lot of bananas. And the banana farmers would all have all these different varieties. And species is not right.
No, varietal. Varieties.
Different varieties of bananas. Yeah. All different kinds of bananas.
Cultivars.
And what that was beneficial for, besides just having a variety of bananas, was if one of the types of bananas got infected with a virus or bacteria or something, it would kill off all of those bananas. But then they still had all these other varieties they were growing. Now, us in America,
Cavendish
we
bananas,
refused to accept the small bananas. We didn't want that. We said, no, we want the large bananas. That is all we want. And because that was all that was demanded, very funny. Because that was all that was demanded, the farmers just all had to start growing those bananas.
Right.
So it became what they call a monoculture.
Correct.
And what happens then? If any of the bananas get a disease or anything like that, it's going to wipe out the entire crop of bananas, be completely desolate. So they grow a variety of bananas in India, but that did happen at one point.
And it is currently happening right now to bananas. I believe the banana cultivar that we use is the Cavendish banana, something like that.
Why, when you say we, who's we?
The royal, we, the Americans. And it's funny that you mentioned that because for a long time, and I believe it was Dole and the American Fruit Company and et cetera, and like, you know, you can get into like banana republics and all like the literal history of fruit companies in South America. Not the point. The point is that for a long time, the United States banned the import of bananas from Caribbean nations, particularly Jamaica, because they wanted to get the cheaper products that they were importing all the way from South America. And because of that, for a long time, you could go, and I don't remember the exact time period, but people would go to Jamaica for vacation. And they would sit down for dessert, and for dessert would be a single banana on the plate. And people would be like, well, I've had a banana before. That's crazy to offer as a dessert. But because they were meticulously raising different species of banana, these bananas that they were serving were on another level that you could center of the plate just as the dessert serve that. And they were like, how do we get these back to the US? And they weren't allowed to export that because of Dole and other fruit companies in the United States, which is so crazy. And who knows how many other regulatory things are in place that stop us from getting our hands on some really good nanners.
Yeah, or just ingredients in general. But, you know, I'm going to stop plugging the show, but I just want to say you should watch Ugly Delicious because the whole show is about culinary inspiration. I mean, in the beginning of the episode, the India episode, which as you know by now is the best episode, he sits down with a comedian.
That's okay.
We'll fix it in post. We'll plug in post. But he sits down with his whole family and his mom makes this amazing like Indian feast and he tries to eat with his hands and he can't and they're like laughing at
Not
him.
Not Aziz Ansari.
It's Aziz Ansari. Okay. Thank you so much. Aziz Ansari, ladies and gentlemen. And they're sitting there with his brother and you know, it's great. And Aziz is like making fun of David because, you know, they're eating with their hands. It's so easy and he like can't do it well. And then he goes to India and it's all about, I mean, he watches black pepper, you know, peppercorns being toasted or whatever they do and all the spices. It's just very interesting. And he, you know, he even himself is humbled in many episodes and it's nice to see, but that is, I think there's a ton of inspiration globally, because every place, every country in the world does things differently as far as food goes.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's just amazing when you can go to a place and sit down and be like, what is this? And you just try it and the person gets excited about it and you get excited about it like you did just now over that episode. It's one of those things where you just have to have that little bit of spark or zaza or something, a je ne sais quoi, that makes you just want to go down that path of be like, oh, like I didn't know there was so many different types of black peppers or peppercorns, I guess you'll say, with the pink peppercorns and then the raw green peppercorns and then the actually toasted black peppercorns, what they think are just like what, telecherry peppercorns. So there's different varietals of that too. And there's just like this whole world. And it's like we're constantly scratching the surface and everybody has something, right? Or I hope everybody has something that they get so jazzed about that they just lose themselves. They lose the concept of time in it. And I know we do that. I mean, even if we're not, you know, inspired by the same things, like, we both get stuck going down rabbit holes where we're like, oh, like, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Let's find out about this. And in the food world, that's so all encompassing. And for us being in the meat industry, I find it so interesting to see how, like, why things are regulated the way they are, why we have access to certain things, why people want X over Y over Z. And then to be like, okay, like, that's just the meat going on the plate. Now, what do I do with it? And then we talk about like cooking equipment and spices and seasoning and the way to cook things. And I'm like already getting excited about it. Like, so just starting with something as simple as what am I going to have for dinner to then springboard into this brainstorm of everything that you love and like the, like probably this dopamine hit in your brain. That is something truly inspiring to me. Really impressive.
Well, that was beautiful. That'd be a great note to end it on, but I have something else to say.
Please.
You mentioned meats, you know, and we didn't even talk about that, but I take a lot of joy in, you know, we have access to so many unique meats. And, you know, when I'm in the grocery store in the meat section, I just feel like so bored.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Good point.
And we have so many, and I like making things like the bison stew, right? I mean, bison is basically beef, and I will be making either elk ossobuco or elk stew this winter. But, you know, taking classic dishes that you love or that are, you know, just a famous comfort food or whatever it is, and saying, well, what do we have here that I
what
can-
What if?
Yeah. What did you do with the antelope cutlets? Didn't you have like chicken fried antelope?
Chicken fried antelope steaks. Yeah, which Bianca ended up doing for one of our photo shoots.
Like, that's fun to be able to do that. And sometimes when I don't have dinner planned, you know, I'll just like kind of look through our catalog of products we have and I'm like, what?
Or your freezer full of stuff.
Or my freezer full of
stuff. You have a lot of stuff on your freezer.
We're working on it. and I'll be like, all right, what's available? What can I do with this? You know, what do I feel? So I think that personally, that gives me inspiration as well, starting with a fun protein and saying, what, you know, what might that be good?
It's very true. I think that's kind of where I start. And I wonder what it's like for people who don't aren't like big meat eaters, but I build my meals around my protein.
For sure.
Basically, even if I'm doing something like a chicken breast, I'm like, oh, do I want to do just a protein and a salad?
Yeah.
Like yesterday I had just salmon with that herby harissa spice blend on it, oven baked, just nice and simple with the side salad. And that was it. And then a whole bar of chocolate later. But the point was, I was just like, well, let's do something light and we'll have like this boldly flavored protein and then a lighter salad just kind of cut through all of that. Or like you're doing with the bison stew. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, oh, I wish we could get smaller bison roasts and we can cut things out ourselves. And but, you know, it's about having access too. And that's why it breaks my heart sometimes when people are like, oh, I've never had X, Y, and Z. And like, oh, I don't think I'd like it. I think there's you get to a certain point where you almost realize how limited your imagination was. And then it's that threshold, that brave new world you're breaking into. Oh man, doesn't it get you excited though?
It does. Almost as excited as the first episode of season two.
Can't believe it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. But I think it's time to wrap this one up. I will say it's great to be back. Great to be back in the hot seat with my friend Ben.
We're inspiring you all season.
Definitely want to throw it out there that these episodes are on YouTube and you can see our silly faces and it's very funny and you should watch it on YouTube because Stacey does a lot of funny stuff in there and posts and it gets giggles. But also follow us on YouTube, on Instagram. We got a Twitter, X, whatever you want. I'm not calling it that. I refuse.
Thank you.
but yeah, follow us, please like, subscribe, share with your friends and get inspired. Thanks everyone. 3, 2, 1.